from Charlotte's Web to Flat Stanley to Mr. McGee and his little dog Dee, the ever-expanding universe of children's literature. We all have our favorite classics from childhood that we now read to our kids and grandkids, but the library of KidLit has grown substantially in recent decades, and Maine is home to some of the best writers and illustrators of this new generation. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on Maine Calling, we'll turn a page into the world of children's literature. In our Portland studio, Vicki Smith, children's and teen editor for Kirkus Reviews. Scott Nash of Peaks Island, he's an author and illustrator. His most recent book is The High Skies Adventure of Blue Jay the Pirate. He's also the founder and creative director of Nash Box. And author-illustrator Chris Van Dusen of Camden. His most recent book is If I Built a House. What's your take on children's books these days? Share your favorites and your thoughts. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Kids Lit, today on Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Furnitura, now offering Gus Modern Upholstery. Modern furniture made simple at 75 Market Street in Portland and online at furnitura.com. And by Portland Ovations, presenting Natalie McMaster, Christmas in Cape Breton, December 4th at Merrill Auditorium, portlandovations.org.
Before we begin our discussion today, I wanted to share with you all, our beloved listeners, a milestone for Maine Calling, which is 1 year old today, a feat I attribute to the commitment of MPBN to this kind of local program, and of course to the experienced guidance of our producer, Jonathan Smith, who honed his craft for over a decade with the Diane Rehm Show in Washington, D.C. So, here's to many more. Now, on with the show. Children's books, juvenile literature, or kidlit, as now as we know in its book form, from picture books to adventure novels. But the roots of the genre are in the stories that adults told children long before the advent of the printed page. Some would argue that these books are not serious literature, in quotes, but they are what introduce us to reading, to storytelling, to characters, and in many ways to the lessons of life, both good and bad. Some would say it is serious. We can debate that maybe today. Vicki Smith is the children's and teen editor for Kirkus Reviews. Vicki, let's start with you. How would you characterize the status of the genre of children's literature today?
I think it's pretty vibrant. Recently, teen literature, which we're not talking about today, has seen a big surge, and it's attracted a lot of attention. And I think that what that's done for books for younger kids is it's allowed them a little bit of space to really expand and try new things. I see a lot more innovative, exciting books for children than I saw maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and it's a lot of fun to open every box.
So when you say innovative and exciting, does that mean risk-taking also?
Some of them are risk-taking, but some of them just stretch the bounds of what is fun. So I don't think it has to be risky to be innovative.
Chris Van Dusen, what were some of your favorite books as a kid?
Well, probably my favorite was a book by Robert McCloskey called Burt Dow, Deep Water Man. It was his last book that he wrote, and now I've revisited it, and I realized I really liked it more for the illustration than for the writing. But the illustrations are just fantastic. Where the Wild Things Are was one of my favorites. Anything by Dr. Seuss, all those were really, really classics.
And those are classics, and many of us would remember those. Scott Nash, we asked you to submit sort of books you were interested in. Your list had some names that I'd never heard of. Is there a sort of new emerging group of writers and illustrators that you find exciting?
There is, and one of the really positive trends that I'm seeing lately in children's books is an influx of incredible talent moving here to Maine. I've compiled a little bit of a list here, myself and Chris excluded. I can list Kevin Hawkes, Melissa Sweet, Mike Gorham, Lincoln Pierce, Kate Valentine, Jamie Hogan, Daniel Minter, Ann Sibley O'Brien, Matt Tavares, Doug Smith, Caleb Brown, Lynn Plourd, Marianne Lloyd, and Sarah Thompson all reside here in Maine. And that's just a list that I compiled on the boat. We have an incredible amount of talent here in this state.
Why is that, do you think?
I think it's partially due to our sort of legacy authors like McCluskey and Dolif Ipkar. I think there's a sense of a lifestyle here that's conducive to the creative process. That we have enough culture here to stoke our creative juices. And we have a lifestyle here that's also conducive to the more solitary practice of writing and illustrating.
Yeah, Vicki Smith, you see, I'm sure, a number of books come across your desk. Are you seeing a lot of writers from Maine?
I am, and it's really exciting, and also a lot of books set in Maine. And it just makes me really happy that I'm able to share books that are by and about Maine and Mainers with the nation. It's great.
What's interesting is that demographically, Maine is moving toward, it's the oldest state in the nation and is moving in that direction. And yet there's this sort of community of children's books writers. Chris Van Dusen, what is it about Maine that makes it a good place either to write a book or to set a children's book?
Well, when you're working for yourself, basically self-employed, you can work anywhere. You can work on an island. You can work, in the tundra. You can work anywhere because if you have FedEx and you have fax and now computer and stuff like that, you can do it pretty much anywhere. So why not live where it's gorgeous? And I live in Camden. It's just a beautiful town, and it inspires me. My illustrations, I pick up things from my environment and I put it in the illustrations. So I'm really influenced by the things around me and just the physical beauty of the place. It's just outstanding. By the way, Scott, I got to add Tony Buzzio.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Steve Costanza.
Exactly.
And Cindy Lord.
Yeah. Wow. I knew I'd forget some.
And they'll probably we'll
come up with some more throughout this. Yeah. <That's
right. laughs> we'll just interject names as we
Kathy
go.
Kathy Folio, too.
Yeah, there we go.
And Maria Testa.
Wonderful.
Oh, that's
yes.
Right.
And Leonard Chornall, who was not from Maine, but he was my uncle. And he illustrated, I have a few books here. We'll post some pictures on our Facebook page.
Sure.
Encyclopedia Brown was one of the series that he illustrated for Donald Sobel.
Oh, my gosh.
He lived in New York City, but did come to Maine to visit us.
That's what got me reading were those books.
Oh,
those
really?
Those are great.
Yeah, I'm reading them now to my six-year-old. He likes them very much. And, of course, he's excited that his Uncle Leonard. Anyway, a slight diversion. Vicki, when we opened the show, you were sort of saying, well, there are some innovative books that sort of expand the boundaries of what is considered fun. I think of, I guess, the traditional children's story, and maybe this comes from the oral traditions, but that it's many of them are pretty much like The Wizard of Oz. You have a child with a flaw who is our hero, but a slight flaw. They're too curious or whatever, and they set out on an adventure. And with the help of some friends or enemies that later become friends, they overcome adversity or a villain or both, and in the end learn a lesson, which seems to be the sort of the standard story. Are we moving beyond that?
I really don't think we're ever going to move beyond those bare bones, and at least in terms of fiction. And a lot of nonfiction has those characteristics as well, because we're humans and we seek to understand the human experience through stories. And it used to be oral stories and now it is printed stories. But that classic character arc is one that we all recognize. We all want to either emulate or avoid it. And where it becomes great literature is where the character is flawed enough to be distinctive and sympathetic enough for the reader to invest him or herself into it, and where the lesson is tucked in and implicit as opposed to bashing the readers over the head. And I think that we are getting better and better at that.
It was Roald Dahl's Maximum, which was first off, kill off the parents. Wasn't that sort of? And I think what he meant by that is let's get to the kid is being the main character, independent of the connections to the parents. Let them sort of run free within a narrative.
Well, I think that you need to do that just to have a plot, because if the parents are there helping the child along the way, then nothing will happen because the parents will keep the kid safe.
Exactly.
And we need, at least vicariously, to experience danger in order to learn about the world and how to manage it ourselves. So killing off the parents is an excellent way to start a children's story.
Or have dithering parents like in Flat Stanley.
Yeah.
Yeah, where
ineffectual parents are a good second best.
or principals as you get older, you know, authority figures who can't quite get out of their own way.
Exactly.
There was an article this summer, I think it was in The Guardian. I've lost my notes, of course. But the gist of it was that that in a lot of kids' books these days, rather than the that kids were sort of being – rather than going into an adventure of their own free will for some sort of mysterious journey, you know, they were being thrust out because of the harsh realities of the world, of homelessness, that these themes of a real hard world were now carrying over into some of the storylines in children's books. Are you seeing that, Vicki?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's being done very well. There's a new book by British author called Annabelle Pitcher. It's called My Sister Lives on the Mantelpiece. And it's about a little boy whose older sister was killed in a fictional bombing of a London tube station. And it's destroyed his family. His mother has left the family. His father is an alcoholic. They move to a rural area. And the boy becomes friends with a Muslim girl, which causes great problems at home. And, you know, that's a sort of a perfect storm of misfortune to happen to this character. But so many elements of his story are recognizable to kids these days, and it's so important for kids who are going through trying times to understand that they are not alone. I think it's also important for kids who are not going through trying times to understand that they are fortunate and others are not, and so that they can develop empathy. I think it's super important, and it can be done really, really well.
Is it I'm wondering, is it easier for children to absorb the complexities of sort of sorting out the world? Is it easier for them to do that in a story, or is that true of all humans, do you think?
I'd say it's true of all humans. Wouldn't you agree?
Sure. I think it's a universal.
And so for kids, they also like a good story. But Chris Van Dusen, you sort of deal, I think, more in the realm of sort of the and certainly in your illustrations, it's sort of those really drive your books. The story is great. There's rhyme. It's a fun story in the case of The Circus Ship, which we love at home. But it's really, I mean, the drawings are the star in many ways.
Well, I started out as being an illustrator, so the writing came second. I still think of myself as primarily an illustrator and an author second. But I really enjoy the writing process as well. I mean, I think I have more fun writing this story than I do illustrating it, because illustrating is, you know, it's a much longer process, and it takes, you know, a good 6, 7, 8 months to illustrate a book for me. But writing is kind of can be very spontaneous, and it just the ideas spring into your head and you jot down. Since I write in rhyme, you know, a rhyme will pop into my head and I'll pull the car over and write it down or whatever. So it's you know, I enjoy both parts of it very much.
Can I just interrupt and say that writing in verse is really, really hard. I was talking to Chris about this a little earlier about he makes it sound so easy, but he is spending a lot of time crafting that verse so that it reads aloud without any effort at all. And I think that a children's book is really succeeding when it seems so easy. People think, oh, I can do that. But they really can't, because the incredible amount of time and energy and effort and thoughts that's been invested in it is what makes it so easy and so much fun.
Thank you.
It is true that people, you know, there are some people who think that they have a children's book in them, or, oh, it's a simple story with some simple drawings. Gee, I can do that. But a good one makes it really much harder than that, isn't it, Scott Nash?
It is. And actually, writing good rhyme is very difficult. I mean, I appreciated that. I grew up in a family, you guys might appreciate this as well, where we had two parts of our storytelling time before we went to bed. We would start with actually not so much picture books, but chapter books, you know, which I really appreciate. So we had this sort of sustained narratives. They were illustrated chapter books. But then my mother would actually end by reading us poetry, you know, works by James Whitcomb Riley or Robert Louis Stevenson. And they were often illustrated anthologies of poetry. And that made a very strong impact on me early on in connecting visuals with the words. And now, I mean, to this day, I see the writing process and the illustration process as an iterative one or a progressive one. I sort of love moving from illustration, using that as a way to inspire the writing, and the writing also informs the illustration as well.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, please stay with us.
This week on Maine Watch, a conversation with former U.S. Senator and Special Envoy George Mitchell. We'll discuss recent events in Gaza and Egypt, as well as the 2012 elections in the U.S., and Mitchell's role monitoring athletic integrity at Penn State. Plus, we'll see clips of a recent BBC documentary featuring Mitchell and his son Andrew as they returned to Northern Ireland. We hope you'll join us for the next Maine Watch.
That's this evening at 8 o'clock and tomorrow evening at 9 o'clock on MPBN Television and tomorrow afternoon at 12:30 here on MPBN Radio.
I'm Bill Littlefield. This week on Only a Game, the legacy of baseball labor leader Marvin Miller. Also meet the Ghanaian who could go in the first round of the 2013 NFL Draft and the deflective daffiness of Can Jam.
Sometimes he might throw a rock in and I just have to just touch it. And other times I might slam it in. It's called Can Jam, not Can Touch.
Join us.
Join us for Only a Game, a new program on the MPBN schedule, Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. For more information, visit mpbn.net. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Portland's Downtown District, offering holiday shoppers a directory of stores, restaurants, and seasonal events online at portlandmaine.com.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, children's literature. With me in the studio, Vicki Smith. She's the children's and teen editor for Kirkus Reviews. Scott Nash. He's an author and illustrator. His most recent book is The High Skies Adventure of Blue Jay the Pirate. And Chris Van Dusen. He's also a children's book author and illustrator. His latest work is If I Built a House. We'd like you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. A lot of Facebook messages coming in and phone calls, but Chris Van Dusen, we took a break and you wanted to make another point.
Yeah, I just want to add something. Keith, you just said, you know, a lot of people will say that they've got a book in them or they got an idea for a children's book. I used to always think, well, you know, people would say, well, what do you do? And I'd say, well, I write and illustrate a children's book. And I felt a little bit kind of like that wasn't necessarily a really important profession. And then I realized one day, and I was kind of looking at what I had to achieve in 32 pages. And when you think about all the things that go into a children's book, you know, introduction of characters that are likable, you know, a conflict, climax, resolution, all those things have to fit in 32 pages with the least amount of text as possible. And then I started thinking, well, maybe this is rather important, you know, what we do.
Well, I think Jan in Cumberland would agree that what you do is important. Let's ask her. Hi, Jan.
Hear me?
Yes, Jan, go ahead, please.
Oh, gosh, this is such a great show. I'm a parent of four small kids, and at one point they were all four under four. And so children's books is near and dear to my heart. Unfortunately, we've moved on to the genre of Big Nate and Captain Underpants, but I'm a huge fan of Chris Van Dusen. And two points I wanted to make were, one, let's not underestimate children's books' impacts on the parents, because, you know, you hear all the time in the school system, reach your kids at an early age. And engaging the parents is critical to make them want to read. And so this goes to my second point, which is, Chris, your work was really one of the first children's stories outside of Robert McCluskey that I was excited to read to my kids. And
there's
two reasons for that. One, I think, is that you, like Robert, capture Maine for me as a child who grew up in Maine, and now I get to share that with my kids. I mean, your illustrations, I mean, they're very different, obviously, than Robert's, but they capture Maine in such a way that really resonates with my personal childhood. So listen, not underestimate children's books with the parents, and thank you for your beautiful work.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much.
I think that's a great point, because when a kid loves a book, they're going to want to hear it over and over and over again. And for a book that can sustain both the child and the parent for days and weeks at a time, you know that that's a really substantial achievement.
From Facebook, hi to Scott Nash and Chris Van Dusen. This is Ellen on Facebook. Scott Nash and Chris Van Dusen, two of my favorite Maine authors here in Waterville. Circus Ship is definitely one of our favorites here in Waterville. And a couple of authors that were left off the list from William via Facebook. My mother-in-law is also a children's author in Maine named Jane Nalaboff, author of The Only One Club, among others. And Maud on Facebook writes the other children's author you forgot to mention, Jessica Kinney, author of the rural Maine set The Pig Scramble on Islandport Press.
So and Jeannie Brett.
Oh, exactly. Oh, keep, my gosh.
I'm going to drive home today.
You know? I know. We'll be thinking, I know. We shouldn't have started this. Should we have?
I know.
It's going to be trouble.
Duncan
keep calling in. Yeah.
Duncan on Facebook wants to know, what does Scott think are his major influences on illustrating? What is it with authors, artists living on islands?
Well, one of my major influences from an early age was I was really attracted to pen and ink drawings. And I happen to have grown up on Cape Cod, and which is also where Edward Gorey resides, or resided for many years. And I had the pleasure of discovering his work fairly early on, and I was very, very influenced by him. I did drawings back in my college days that were very similar, reminiscent of Gorey's work, and sort of abandoned that. And I've recently, with the publishing of the High Skies Adventures of Blue Jay the Pirate, have come back sort of full circle to working in pen and ink. And I have to say, it feels completely natural. It feels as if I should have been working in this medium for many, many years. As far as living on an island, I moved to the island. I remember going from saying, I'll move to Portland. And I said to my wife, Nancy, who's also an illustrator, there's no way I'm moving to an island. As far as I recall, she threw some fairy dust at me, and my next memory was that we were sitting at a closing. And but I've come to love living on the island.
It was Casco Bay fairy
Casco
dust.
Bay. Exactly, right? Exactly.
Sorry about that. Yeah. Anyway, let's go to Westbrook now and Josiah. Hi, Josiah. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
Well, I'm an aspiring children's book author myself. Unfortunately, I'm not able to do the illustrations to my satisfaction, so I have a couple of questions. My books are sort of in the Seuss genre. They're meaningful rhymes and have been well received by children's librarians, college professors, and most importantly, moms and dads and kids that I've read them to. My question is, how and where should I submit these? And my main concern is maintaining some sort of creative control over the choice of the illustrator. And do I have any as a first-time author, or how do I handle that?
In a word, no. You don't.
One thing I would say, and I think you understand this, because don't feel like you have to send the manuscript in with illustrations.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest mistakes people make. They
think
they have to have their manuscript all fully illustrated, and they'll go ahead and they'll hire independent illustrators or try to do it on their self. And it actually ruins their chances of getting published. So don't even think about the illustrations. If you're the writer and you're an illustrator, just think about your manuscript.
Right. Okay.
The second piece of advice is the whole agent thing, you know, and a lot of people ask me, well, do you need an agent to get published? Well, you don't really need an agent to get published, but it definitely helps get your foot through the door, you know, and your manuscript seen in front of an editor. So a lot of times I will tell people, if they're a first-time writer, to try to send a book off to a local publisher, and we have several here in Maine that do a really nice job with children's books that don't necessarily require an agent. And that's a good way to sort of get your foot in the door. And once you have one book published, it's like the best business card you're ever going to have in your life, because from then on, it's much, much easier.
Exactly.
Yep.
Can I add one more thing? If you haven't heard of it already, you should look into the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators.
Yep.
It's a great networking opportunity. They do regional and national conferences, and they can put you in touch with – or put you in contact with, perhaps not in connect you in a business way, but with editors and with agents, so that you get to know exactly how the publishing industry works.
Yeah, their website is scbwi.org, and it's very, very good for first-time writers.
Squibby.
Well, now that you mention that, we'll go to Brunswick and Anna, who is the regional advisor for SCBWI. Hi, Anna.
Yes, here I am.
Timely call.
Hi, Chris, how are you?
Good. Is this Anna Bull?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Anna.
Oh, hi, Anna. How are you?
So I'm doing very well up here in Brunswick, and you just gave the plug that I wanted to give, which is that we have over 500 members, the SCBWI does, in Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire, and over 1,800 in New England. So there are a lot of children's book writers and illustrators that you couldn't possibly list, and who are doing wonderful things and creative things. And people who are interested in writing, new writers, could certainly attend our conference in May. And more information is at nescbwi.org. And there's also wonderful continuing and adult ed classes at MECA and through Maine Writers and Publishers Association as well.
So, yeah. Anna, how do these two, like, how do you link these people up? Do you do, like, 20-second dating at the conference and see which authors and illustrators sort of fit together? Or?
You know, one of the most interesting things about being an aspiring writer is the length of the journey. And I think that nobody who gets into it writing that first poem knows how long the journey is going to be. I have heard some people say, I'm an overnight wonder. It only took me 20 years. You know, it's a very exactly. difficult business. And as far as matching people up, there's a lot of research that goes into that, understanding what publishers do, what imprints they have, understanding which clients an agent represents. Do they do nonfiction, young adult only? What is it that they do? So a lot of this information is found at scbwi.org, which is an international organization.
I want to thank Anna for all that you do to have organized the illustrators and writers in this area. Have we left anyone off the list?
Oh, tons. So
okay. It's a 45-minute show, okay. So we can't do that. Well, Anna, thanks for checking in, and we will post those links on our Maine Calling Facebook page as well.
That would be super. Have a great day.
All right. Bye. Thanks. Same to you. 1-800-399-3566 to Peaks Island and Annie. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I know that
hi.
Voice.
Hi, guys.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Great conversation. One
join
of our
in.
Topics.
Yeah.
I'm a children's book writer and illustrator, one of those islanders. And I wanted to add, I'm loving the themes that are coming out, talking about books set in Maine, talking about expanding the boundaries, and talking about empathy. And I wanted to call attention to something that's been happening recently that's a really exciting new development for Maine books and maybe an unexpected one, which is that we have a whole new collection of books about new Mainers, people who have immigrated, mostly come as refugees mm-hmm. from countries all over the world, that it's really now turning into a kind of new little subgenre. And I was commissioned a number of years ago to write a book about Cambodian Americans, and we now have three novels, two picture books, and a collection of short stories that are all about new Mainers. So it's a whole kind of new take on the Maine sense of place.
Annie, everybody knows you here, but do you mind identifying yourself for the rest of the audience?
It's Anne Sibley O'Brien, and the Cambodian book is called The Path of Stars. And we've started another author and Kirsten Cappy of Curious City, and I have started a new project called I'm Your Neighbor Books because of our awareness of what happened with these new books. And there's a website, and there's community reads coming up, and it's just kind of coming together a sudden new thing that nobody planned, but that is really a wonderful development.
That's great. Mm. Yeah. Speaking of island influences, Annie's books often feature children from the island. Am I right, Annie?
Yes, yes.
As well as Jamie Hogan's books tend to use some of our island children as characters.
Annie, we were talking earlier about what makes Maine sort of a great setting for books, but also a home to writers. Do you want to weigh in?
I agree with what Scott said about the, well, and also what Chris was saying. Scott was mentioning the time and the quiet to work, and Chris was referring to the fact that we can work anywhere. To me, one of the most exciting things, too, is that those of us that do children's books have really created a community. And the reason that Scott can sit on the boat and come up with a list of 20 people in 15 minutes is because we tend to know each other. And Maine is small enough that we've really connected and drawn a lot of sustenance and delight from sharing what we do because we all work in isolation.
Yeah. Annie, you want to plug your book, latest book, before we go?
It's called A Path of Stars.
Path of Stars. All right. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
Bye, Annie.
We're going to take another short break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. The number to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, the Senate considers a bill to allow federal agencies to access electronic messages, balancing privacy rights and public safety.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show coming up at 2 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
Hi, I'm John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway. And you know what? I want to disrupt your evening. That's right. Takeaway is a one-hour news magazine that features unique conversations about topics of the day. We call on our partners, the New York Times, WGBH Boston, experts from around the country, so you can better understand your world in a sometimes provocative format. Starting soon, we'll be right here on MPBN Radio every weeknight. Tune in to The Takeaway at midnight, following On Point, right here on MPBN Radio.
For more information, please visit mpbn.net or the December issue of Experience Magazine. Thanks. And coming up at 1 o'clock, it's the Commonwealth Club of California with Steven Pinker, professor of psychology at Harvard University and author of The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. That's coming up after Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, books we love to read to our children. And the people who write and draw them, pictures in them. With me in the studio is Vicki Smith. She's the children's and teen author for Kirkus Reviews. Scott Nash, he's an author and illustrator. And Chris Van Dusen is also a children's book author and illustrator. All make their home here in Maine. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. We'll go to Ray in Beals in a moment, but first, another name on the list, writes Chris via Facebook. Don't forget Rochelle Draper, author of The Stonewall Dragon, a great mother who lives out in Otisfield, Maine, with her very proud family. The list continues to grow. Let's go to Beals and Ray. Hi, Ray. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to add to the list, as you might guess. I have a friend whose name is Kelly Cunnane. That's C-U-N-N-A-N-E. I believe that's how it's spelled. She wrote a book. She's had a couple of children's books that's been published. Her first one was For I Am a Kenyan Child. And that book won some, I don't know what the award was, but it won an award. And I don't know where the children authors are from. The list that you've got is growing, of course, but this is down east. We're really down east.
That's right.
And we're next to
Canada. I have to get out more.
Yeah, Washington County.
I'll be out.
I just wanted to mention her name because, she's a children's author and a good one.
So. All right, Ray. Well, thanks for checking in with us today. 1-800-399-3566. Also on Facebook, a listener wants to know if there are, and we've discussed some of them already, but if there are any trends in children's literature that any of you are excited about.
I'm excited about one trend that I'm seeing happening, I think, as a result of the popularity of ebooks. I think we're experiencing a renaissance in the craft of books. I'm seeing it all throughout the industry. We're seeing books that are created and produced in unusual ways. I'm seeing it definitely in the area of graphic novels. We're starting to see books without dust jackets, but have their production values are very high. The quality of the paper is very high.
And the price points seem to be coming down. They seem to be, you seem to be able to pick up a hardbound book that is beautifully crafted for less, for the price of what, you know, was previously, say, a paperback cost. And I see this as a very positive trend, and I'm noticing it sort of throughout the industry. You know, you go to BEA or to the big conferences, and you're seeing the quality of the books seems to be on the rise, and I think this is a good thing.
What about I think you mentioned e-books, but what's happening on that front?
Lots. Lots and not enough.
Yeah, more than can be covered in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
There's some great technologies out there. In ebook form, Kindle's come out with a technology called Whisper. It's a terrible name, Whisper Sync. But essentially what it allows you to do is seamlessly sort of move from reading a book into having it switched to an audio version. So you're able to sort of create continuity. That's an exciting technology.
And in this ongoing debate about, which we've been having about, can you really read a book on a screen, or does it have to be this tactile experience and this feel of a book? I mean, that's really true for kids' books. I mean, when you're in a bed, trying to read a beautiful book, it's not the same as if you're looking on a tablet.
I agree with that.
It's not the same, but I don't want to discount the narrative possibilities of the tablet technologies. I mean, I think that Chris was describing the 32-page picture book, and that's a form that is imposed on us by printing technology. It's not just because people like 32 pages. but it is a perfect technology for conveying a story. But I have spent a fair amount of time working with interactive ebooks that are available on iPad. And there are people who are coming from the gaming community and getting together with people from the traditional narrative community and making things that are stories that are interactive. I'm not sure where you stop calling them books, but where they work, it all goes back to what we were talking about earlier, which is great stories and great visuals, and you can have them electronically.
The potential here is huge. Right now, what I'm seeing in picture books feels like, you know, sort of old CD-ROM technology. It feels like, you can roll over and things pop up. I think the potential is to create stories that are time-based narratives, non-linear sort of narratives. I think a lot of those areas, you're just starting to see companies exploring those sort of possibilities with ebooks. I think that's where the excitement lies.
And the people who are really doing them well are not coming from traditional publishing.
I agree. Yeah.
But do any of you, are you sort of under or tempted at all when producers come calling and say, "Gee, Chris, I'd really like to make the circus ship into a movie or a 30-minute cartoon." Mm-hmm. Does that happen? And how do you sort of debate within yourself whether that's a good idea or not?
Yeah, it does happen. I mean, there's definitely been interest in some of my titles. I had a company that wanted to turn the Mr. McGee books into a half-hour children's television program, but that didn't really go anywhere.
What's the debate in your head, if you don't mind, about?
Well, the funny thing about that was I shouldn't say this, but I mean, the guy who was interested in this project, and I think it's fizzled out at this point, so it's safe to say, but he said, "We want to use this animation studio," and he sent me a link to this animation studio, and I looked at it, and it was one of these. I mean, I love animation. I desperately wanted to be an animator before I was a children's book author. But I saw this animation. It was so stiff, and it was, that really horrible animation.
I do.
And I just thought, Mr. McGee's sort of flat, walking.
It needs to be full-blown dynamic animation.
Yeah.
And that's what we struggle with. Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones, to Buxton and Tony. Hi, Tony.
There's Tony. Hi, Tony.
Tony.
Yes, hey, Scott.
How are you, Tony?
Tony, are you on the list?
Yeah. Yeah, she is.
I added her on the list. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Tony.
Hey, I have a question for you two, Scott and Chris.
Mm-hmm.
So because I only write and don't illustrate,
right,
when I get into a conversation with people, which happens at least once a week, where they want to know, sort of what's the future of ebooks for picture books, I'm always a little puzzled. And so this is my opportunity to ask you both at the same time. Do you have a sense that we'll, over time, lose the wide double-page spread in a horizontal formatted book, or do you think that the device will change and make it more feasible to save the double-page spread?
I'm looking forward to a time where we're not adapting picture books to e-forms. I'd like to see us looking at this as an art form in and of itself so that we don't lose the spreads. I hope that the physical book will continue and that we'll create more inventive form. I don't even like the term e-book necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fairly agnostic on how – I love to tell stories. I'm fairly agnostic on how we – you know, which media we choose. I just think it's important to distinguish what the virtues are of different media.
Uh-huh.
The idea of calling these books is bothersome to me. I remember early on when we were doing web development – there used to be a function in web development, a program that allowed you to do a page turn. And we were allergic to that because it just didn't make sense for a dynamic media to be doing page turns as opposed to doing something that was more cinematic. And I'm hoping that e-form will become this thing that we're calling e-books will evolve into something in and of itself.
Okay.
Yeah, Scott's so much better at this. I'm so old school. You know, I still use paint and stuff. So.
Hey.
Wash.
Yeah. Gouache, yeah.
Tony, could you identify yourself too, please?
Oh, this is Tony Buzzio. I'm a children's author from Buxton, Maine.
Gotcha. And you said you're a writer but not an illustrator?
I'm a writer but not an illustrator.
I've got other callers here, but rather than go to them, I'll just ask for you. How do you find an illustrator?
Well, you know, it's really a different process at the beginning of a career than it is, say, at my point. I just published my 17th book. So now I have a lot of input, in fact, pretty complete input, as to who my illustrators might be. But when I first began, I was in the position that most people are in, and that is the editor and art director put their heads together, and they choose an illustrator, and I've been lucky enough that even at that very early stage, I just had tremendous illustrators, and I was lucky that right from the get-go, I've always gotten to see first sketches, revised sketches, and first pass of color art. So I've always had really a lot of input. If there were things that were discrepancies with the text, say, or the need for revision. My first book was a main book, The Sea Chest, and Mary Grand Pré, the Harry Potter illustrator, was the illustrator of The Sea Chest, and she had planned to come to Maine, and at the last minute, the Harry Potter schedule heated up. She wasn't able to come, and my editor and she actually asked me to do the illustration research between first sketch.
Tony, I'm sorry. I'd love to hear the end of that story, but we're out of time. So anyway, thanks for joining us today.
Okay.
And also thanks to Vicki Scott and Chris. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Keith.
Thanks for having us.
Vicki Smith is the children's and teen editor for Kirkus Review. Scott Nash is an author and illustrator. His most recent book is High Sky's Adventure of Blue Jay the Pirate. And Chris Van Dusen, he's also a children's book author and illustrator. His latest work is If I Built a House. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Lucas Owen Randall answered your calls. Matthew Schreiber ran the board. And we had help from the MPBN web team. Don't forget that Saturday, December 1st, is Take Your Child to a Bookstore Day. Many bookstores will be offering deals and discounts for young readers. Here in Portland, Longfellow Books will give anyone under 12 who's accompanied by an adult $10 to spend in their store. We have links on our Facebook page. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Camden National Bank, celebrating the genuine, the trustworthy, the heroes of every day. More online at camdennational.com.